All right. Good morning, everybody. This is not staying on my ear. I have really big ears, so. Okay. We're clear. Okay. So my name is Ryan Donnelly. Valuing Guaranteed Withdrawal Benefits with Stochastic Volatility. This is joint work with Professor Sebastian Jaimungal from the Department of Statistics at the University of Toronto and Dmitry Rubisov from Bank of Montreal. So just to give a summary of exactly what's going on, it's essentially a valuation problem of a product traded at the Bank of Montreal. So I'm going to start by describing exactly the product that we're dealing with and the dynamics that we're considering under our model. I'll go through the method of valuation and this technique of a dimensional reduction, which is pretty interesting. In terms of the numerical solution to some PDEs we derive, I'm going to have to talk about what's called an ADI method. And then I'm going to go over, time permitting, a semi-analytic formula that we've come up with, basically an approximation to the solution to the PDE. So it's a valuation problem which deals with a product at the Bank of Montreal. And the product basically works like this. Let's say I'm the investor and you are the bank. I give you $0, and then you go ahead and invest that in some sort of index consisting of an equity and some bond index. Now, as time goes on, you every single day you withdraw a fraction of what is currently invested, and you basically consider that a management fee, put it into your pocket. But also, as time goes on, you repay me some fixed sequence of payments over time. That's what these gamma k's are at times tk. So the idea is that by the end of the contract, you've actually repaid me in all of these fixed payments my initial investment F0. The sum of all of these gammas is equal to my initial investment. Now, because you're investing in some sort of equity and bond index, it's possible that after you repay me this F0, there might be still something left in the fund. And if that's true, then at maturity, I get that back as well. If the fund actually goes into a negative value, which is possible because you're giving me back these fixed payments, the fund is essentially closed out, and I don't get back anything at the end. I still receive my fixed payments from you, but at the end, I don't receive whatever is remaining. So that's where the optionality in the contract actually comes up. Okay, so the dynamics of the fund that we're using in our model, we're directly doing things in a risk-neutral measure. For now, we're going to consider constant interest rates. We have generalized this to stochastic interest rates. Unfortunately, I don't have enough time to show everything. And we're also using a local volatility for the equity portion of the fund. Again, we can use other volatility models. I can talk about what happens in, for example, the Heston model. So the returns of the index are some weighting between the returns of the equity and the remainder is the returns in the bond. And if you simply plug in some of the dynamics here, we get that the index follows dynamics like this with the local volatility governed by S. Now, the fund itself, because you're withdrawing as a management fee alpha every single day, which is a fraction of the total fund, that's where this alpha of the total fund gets taken out of the fund every day. And this DJ represents a repayment, one of these fixed repayments, gamma. So, for example, every month, you might pay me gamma dollars every single month. So it's sort of a jumping term. It's this jumping term which can actually cause the fund to go negative. In terms of the mathematics, it doesn't really affect anything. If it goes negative from the investor's point of view, it may as well be worth zero. Okay? So this is the SDE that the value of the fund satisfies. And it starts at F0, of course. Okay. In terms of valuation, the total value of this contract is equal to the sum of the present values of all these gamma repayments. I'm using a bond notation here simply because, in general, we can have stochastic interest rates. And then at the end of the contract, at maturity, if there's anything left in the fund, we get that back as well. Okay? If the fund happens to be negative, from your perspective, you've closed it out. But we're only concerned with the positive portion of this. Now, the actual valuation problem, this value F0, the initial investment, that's fixed. What we'd like to do is find the value of alpha, the management fee, which actually makes V0 equal to F0. So we want this to be a fair contract, depending on your management fee. You could charge an astronomical management fee, but then no one's going to invest. Now, the only hard part in this is trying to calculate what this expectation is. Now, it turns out we can write Ft at maturity in this form, just some manipulations of the dynamics of F and basically crank out an integral. That's what F is equal to at maturity, where this process Y is given as some deterministic factor times a Dolan-Dave exponential. Okay. So if you stare at this for a minute, you realize that this looks a lot like an Asian option. If you ignore the denominator, what's in the numerator looks like the payoff of an Asian option, an arithmetic Asian option. Keep in mind, this I've written as, an integral, but this J term is a jump, so it's actually a discrete sum. We could just as easily do this if the payments were remade continuously, or some combination of lump payments and continuous payments. But the way the contract actually works in reality is they're discrete payments. So this is essentially an Asian option, except in terms of the valuation, this expectation is written with the asset as the numeraire. So the expectation looks like an Asian option written on some auxiliary process Y, which doesn't represent a stock or anything like that, but we do know its dynamics, and it's written with Y as the numeraire. So a standard PDE approach to trying to value this would result in a four-dimensional PDE. If you think about, in the standard Black-Scholes model, constant interest rates and constant volatility, if you're trying to price an Asian option, you get a three-dimensional PDE. You get one dimension for time, one dimension for the underlier, and one dimension for the cumulative integral of the underlier. Now, here, if I actually go back to the dynamics of Y, the volatility of Y is actually governed by some other process, S. So that's where the additional dimension in the PDE for this comes from. If you want to think about not a local volatility model, but directly modeling volatility as a process, like the Heston model, it's if you tried to do an Asian option in the Heston model, it'd be four dimensions, not three. So in order to get around this, and we'd like to reduce it down by one dimension, there's a technique by Vercher in 2001, which has a dimensional reduction. So I'm going to go over exactly what that is. Let's define this process X like this, starting at, well, this is actually zero. F0 minus JT is zero. JT represents the cumulative repayments at any given point in time. So at maturity, that's actually equal to F0. There's no problem with non-measurability of processes or anything like that here. And we're going to define this deterministic function QT like this. If you play around with these equations, do some integration by parts, you see that X at time capital T is equal to F0 minus the discrete sum of all of these Ys at different times. And this is actually what appears in the numerator of my payoff function, okay? So if I define ZT as XT over YT, then I end up with Z at maturity being exactly equal to what that payoff function is with if I add the plus sign, okay? So if I can find dynamics for Z, then I suddenly have less dimensions, which I'm happy about. And, well, wow, we have dynamics for Z. Okay, so the expectation we're trying to evaluate now is this. The dynamics of S and Z are not difficult to compute at all. It's simply a standard application of Itô's lemma. But of course, we do still have, they're coupled SDEs because this S is kind of driving the volatility of Z. Okay, so it's still one dimension higher than you might expect normally. A standard PDE method now gives us the partial differential equation that we have to solve. Basically, a Black-Scholes type analysis gives us. There's nothing terribly special to point out here other than the fact that we've moved into log space now. So we're not actually using S as one of the state variables. We're using the log of S as a state variable. That just pops out some convexity corrections, and it also gets rid of, normally there would be an x here and an x squared there, but when we've moved into log space, we get rid of that. It just makes the numerics a little bit easier because certain discrete versions of differential operators will be constant rather than changing through state. Okay, the only, I suppose, difficult part to deal with here maybe is this cross term. That's actually what I'm going to get to next. So I'll give a brief introduction to what this ADI method is. ADI stands for Alternating Direction Implicit. Originally, when we tried to solve this PDE, I just straight up did some explicit method. Either I ran into terrible numerical instabilities, which are common with explicit methods, or my computer was running things for hours and I didn't want to have to wait that long. So I was pointed in the direction of a couple of papers that introduced me to alternating direction implicit methods. They were originally introduced in the 50s to solve heat type equations, so high dimensional heat equations, but with a cross derivative term. And then much more recently, they were applied to pricing standard call options under the Heston model, which is a little bit more along the lines of what we're doing. So I kind of just modified these ADI methods a little bit to apply directly to our PDE. The way this works, if we take the PDE and rewrite it in this form, where LZ, LX, and LXZ are three differential operators, LZ will contain all the derivatives in Z, LX will contain all the derivatives in X, and LXZ is the one cross derivative term. They are, in general, time dependent. The way the numerical scheme works is basically I compute the explicit derivative like this. If I actually take this to be my previous time step solution, if I ignore the second and third line here, then it's a fully explicit method. Okay, and that just wasn't really making me happy. The idea behind the ADI method is once you've done this, you then add and subtract, sort of hand-wavy speaking, formally speaking, you add and subtract some fraction times one of the differential operators, but you actually do it at different times. Here we have the differential operator at time step n minus 1, and here we have it at time step n. And the differential operator is acting on the original data set, gn. So on the left-hand side, we'd like to solve for v at time n, v1 at time n, and that corresponds to inverting this operator. This is, again, going back, one of the reasons we worked in log space. It's just easier to invert the operator if all the coefficients are constant rather than having to invert. This is like a big matrix, not a two-dimensional matrix, but like a three-dimensional matrix, and you're inverting slices. So it's easier to invert one than it is to invert every single slice of the matrix. And then we do the same thing with the Z operator. We essentially add some multiple of the Z operator, but at different times on both sides. And again, we're inverting this entire operator. And the result we get, we call that G at the previous time step. And iterating this from time capital N at maturity back to zero gives us the solution to the PDE at time zero. So, results. A colorful slide. What we do is, keep in mind, the idea of the valuation here is to find the value of the management fee, which makes the entire contract fair. So I essentially value the contract for various different management fees, and I find at which value of alpha the total value of the contract is equal to the initial investment. In this case, the initial investment was equal to $1 million. Okay? So there's some obvious behavior which we can take out of this, which is very intuitive. The blue line represents the value only of the optional part of the contract. So it doesn't include all of the fixed payments made throughout the term of the contract. It's essentially just that expectation. Obviously, if the management fee is much higher, you're withdrawing money from the fund much more, and it's much less likely to expire in the money. And even if it does expire in the money, it'll be at a value much closer to zero. So as the management fee goes up, we have that the value of the option portion of the contract goes down. The green line represents the value of the cash flows being repaid, which is independent of alpha. And so the sum of these two things crosses par value for some value of alpha, in this case 0.39%. Okay. So I'll talk about a semi-analytic formula that we've come up with, which provides a pretty good approximation to solving the PDE with numerical methods. And the motivation behind this is that there are semi-analytic formulas which approximate the value of an Asian option. Okay? So we go back to the original expectation we're trying to compute. We want to put this in the form of an actual Asian option, not an Asian option written with the asset itself as numeraire. So we do a measure change. Keep in mind that this process y was some deterministic exponential times the Dolan-Days exponential. So we can consider this Dolan-Days exponential to be a measure change. And under this new measure, well, this is exactly the exponential or the expectation we'd like to compute. It wasn't until I did this that I realized something very interesting, so I figure I may as well point this out. If all of the repayments are made before maturity, so let's say that the contract lasts 20 years, but these fixed repayments are finished after 15 years. So after 15 years, you have your $1 million back, and you're just waiting to the end to see maybe if the fund matures at a positive value or not. This mathematical expression, because this integral is in fact a discrete sum, the last term in this discrete sum, in the example I just gave you, would be a repayment at 15 years. In this form, you can see that the volatility of anything, the volatility of Y or the volatility of S, between the years 15 to 20 doesn't actually affect the value of the contract. So I didn't realize that until I'd actually performed this measure change and looked at this. And I mean, mathematically it's true. I've obviously confirmed it numerically that the volatility of your process after the last fixed repayment doesn't matter. The financial intuition behind this is that after the last repayment is made, essentially you're just holding the fund. You're only holding the fund at this point, which is either going to be worth, I mean, what is the present value of the fund at maturity? It's whatever the value of the fund is right now. So that's kind of cool. The dynamics of Y in the new measure are given by this. This is simply an application of Gersonov's theorem. Now what we do is we assume that we're given some implied volatility curve for the underlying equity. Okay. From this implied volatility curve, what we can do is we can back out a volatility curve corresponding to Y. So essentially, we can take this integral and we can get from it the integral of exactly the same thing, except with a WS squared in there. So the fact that Y has a W in its volatility, but S doesn't, what we actually need to be able to solve for Y is the integral with W there. But by taking some derivatives, multiplying by W, and then reintegrating, we can do that. And then from then on out, it's basically the same idea as the semi-analytic approximation to an Asian option. We basically just do a moment matching technique. I'm trying to find values, constants A and B, such that this exponential is equal to the expected value of all these repayments, or sorry, not repayments, but the expected value of all these Y's, and that this exponential is equal to the second moment of all of these Y's. Then what we do is we approximate this expectation by basically we put a log normal random variable in here. I mean, the sum of log normal random variables is not log normal, but we're going to approximate it with one. And then some standard first-year calculus shows that this expectation is equal to this quantity, which is very similar to the Black-Scholes formula. So numerically, for various values of alpha, I just chose a whole bunch of different values of the management fee. I'm only demonstrating here the value of the option. So I forget about the fixed repayments because those are not going to change depending on alpha. And you can see that the values, you know what I forgot to include here is that these are in thousands of dollars. So these are much bigger than they actually seem. But they match fairly well across typical values of alpha. So just to wrap things up, guaranteed withdrawal products sort of have this representation as an Asian option on some auxiliary process. Because we can represent this expectation as an Asian option, we can use ADI methods and dimensional reduction technique invented for Asian options to efficiently compute their value. And we have a semi-analytic approximation which provides very similar results to the straight up numerical techniques. Thank you. For the semi-analytical technique, I don't solve a PDE.
It's instant.
There are some things that I still have yet to do, and I'm waiting for some input from our correspondent Dimitri at the Bank of Montreal. We're trying to figure out how model dependent all of our results are. So I only presented here results for a local volatility model, but the local volatility we're using is one generated by a Heston model. So we take a Heston model, get an implied volatility surface, and then using Dupuy's formula, we get a local volatility function which gives the same implied volatility surface. Now, I can write down a PDE which does the valuation in the Heston model, and I compare it to the valuation in the corresponding local volatility model. So what we haven't done yet is because I'm basically just waiting for Dimitri to do something for me, is do the same kind of thing for the semi-analytic model. The results I showed were actually with just a made-up local volatility function and implied volatility function. So I'd like to do the same thing where the implied vol function I get actually comes from some stochastic volatility model, like the Heston model. Sorry, slide number. Why? Not exactly. No. Why? J is the total cumulative repayment. So the process J represents how much you've repaid at time t. Y came out of the solution to this. It turns out Ft can be written like this. You basically take the dynamics of F, you play around with it a lot, cancel this term off by multiplying by an exponential, cancel this term off by multiplying by a stochastic exponential, but then you get a drift correction and you have to cancel that off as well. And when you integrate out both sides, you end up with this expression, where Y of T is some strange process. I don't know if there's a nice financial intuition behind what Y actually represents. Right, because this is a martingale, clearly. No, not quite, because notice it's the stolen day's exponential raised to negative 1. Okay, so, if you flip the signs of these two things, right, in y is equal to this exponential times this, except you have to flip these two signs. And so the convexity correction from this won't cancel this anymore. It'll increase it.